Chapter 7. It seemed hours, but it was probably only one, until Timothy said, "Do not be alarmed now, young baas. I'm going to jump into the water and kick this raft to the shore. Without that, we will pass the island by and by." In a moment I heard a splash on one side of the raft, and then Timothy's feet began drumming the water. I guess he was not afraid of sharks this close in. Soon he yelled, "Bottom, young baas! Bottom!" His feet had touched sand. In another few minutes, the raft lurched, and I knew it had grounded. I listened for sounds from shore, hoping there would be a cheerful hello, but there were none. Just the wash of the low surf around the raft. Timothy said, "Here, young baas, on my shoulders and I'll fetch you to the land." He helped me to his back. I said, "Don't forget Stew Cat." He laughed back heartily, "One at a time, young baas." With me on his back, he splashed ashore, and judging from the time it took, the raft wasn't very far out. Then he lifted me down again. "Land!" he shouted. The warm sand did feel good on my feet, and now I was almost glad that we wouldn't have to spend another night on the hard, wet boards of the raft. He said, "Touch it, young baas. Feel the land. 'Tis outrageous good." I reached down. The grains of sand felt very fine, almost like powder. Timothy said, "'Tis a beautiful cay, this cay. Never have I seen this cay." Then he led me to sit under a clump of bushes. He said, "You rest easy while I pull the raft more out of the water. We must not lose it." I sat there in the shade, running sand through my fingers, wondering where, among all those many islands in the Caribbean, we were. Timothy shouted up from the water, "Many fish here! Langosta, too, I be knowing. We roast them." Langosta, I knew, was the native lobster, the one without claws. I heard Timothy splashing around down by the surf and knew he was pulling the raft up as far as he could get it. A moment later, puffing hard, he flopped down beside me. He said, "Catch me breath, then I will tour the island and select a place for the camp." He put Stew Cat into my lap. "Camp?" I asked, stroking Big Stew. Timothy replied, "We may be here 2, 3 days, so we be living comfortable." He could tell I was discouraged, because we had come to the island and there were no people on it. He said confidently, "We be rescue, true. Before the night I build a great fire pile of brush and wood, so the next aircraft that fly over we've set it off." "Where are we, Timothy? Near Panama?" He answered slowly, "I cannot be sure, young baas, not very sure. But you said you knew about the banks and the cays that are near the banks." I wondered if he knew anything really, or if he was just a stupid old black man. Timothy said, "Listen, I know that many banks and cays are round 15 north and 80 long. There is Roncador and Serrano, Quito Sueño and Serenilla and Rosalind. Then there is Beacon and North Cay. Off to the west somewhere is Providencia and San Andres." He paused a moment and then said, "Far way up there, I think, is the Caymans, and then Jamaica. But you are not sure of this island?" Timothy answered gravely, "True. I am not sure." "Do the schooners usually come close by here?" I asked. Again, very gravely, Timothy said, "The man who fishes follows the fish. Certainly the fish be here. I be seen with my own self eyes." I kept feeling that Timothy was holding something back from me. It was the tone of his voice. I'd heard my father talk that way a few times. Once when he didn't want to tell me my grandfather was about to die. Another time was when a car ran over my dog in Virginia. Of course, both times happened when I was younger. Now my father was always honest with me, I thought, because he said that in the end that was better. I wished Timothy would be honest with me. Instead, he got up to take a walk around the quay, saying he'd be back in a few minutes. Then Stew Cat wandered away. I called to him, but he seemed to be exploring too. Realizing that I was alone on the beach, I became frightened. I knew how helpless I was without Timothy. First, I began calling for Stewcat, but when he didn't return, I began shouting for Timothy. There was no answer. I wondered if he'd fallen down and was hurt. I began to crawl along the beach and ran head-on into a clump of low-hanging brush. I sat down again, batting at gnats that were buzzing around my face. Something brushed against my arm, and I yelled out in terror. But I heard a meow and knew it was only Stewcat. I reached for him and held him tight until I heard brush crackling and sang out, "Timothy?" "Yes, young boss," he called back from quite a distance. When he was closer, I said harshly, "Never leave me again! Don't you ever leave me again!" He laughed. "There is nothing to fear here. I walked round the old island and there is nothing but sea grape, sand, a few little lizard and those palm tree." I repeated, "Never leave me alone, Timothy." "All right, young boss. I promise," he said. He must have been looking all around, for he said, "No water here. But 'tis no problem. We still have water in the cag, and we will trap more on the first rain." Still believing he wasn't telling me everything, I said, "You were gone a long time." He answered uneasily, 30 minutes at most. The island is about 1 mile long and a half wide, shaped like the melon. I found a place to make our camp up near the palm. 'Twill be a good place for a lookout. The rise is about 40 feet from the sea." I nodded, then said, "I'm hungry, Timothy." We were both hungry. He went back to the raft, took out the keg of water and the tin of biscuits and chocolate. While we were eating, I said, "You are worried about something, Timothy. Please tell me the truth. I'm old enough to know." Timothy waited a long time before answering, probably trying to choose the right words. Finally, he said, "Young boss, there is, in this part of the sea, a few little caves like this one, surrounded on both sides by humbug banks. They are cut off from the rest of the sea by these banks." I tried to make a mental picture of that. Several small islands tucked up inside great banks of coral that made navigation dangerous was what I finally decided on. "You think we are on one of those caves?" "Maybe, young boss. Maybe." Fear coming back to me. I knew he'd made a mistake in bringing us ashore. I said, "Then no ships will pass even close to us. Not even schooners. We're trapped here." "We might live here forever," I thought. Again, he did not answer directly. I was beginning to learn that he had a way of being honest while still being dishonest. He said, "The place I am thinking of is called Devil's Moat. 'Tis a U-shaped thing, with these sharp coral banks on either side, running maybe 40-50 mile. He let that sink in. It sounded bad. But then he said, "I do hope, young boss, that I am outrageous mistaken." "If we are in the Devil's Mouth, how can we be rescued?" I asked angrily. It was his fault we were there. "The fire pile! When aircraft fly above, they will see the smoke and fire." "But they might just think it is a native fisherman. No one else would come here." I could picture him nodding, thinking about that. Finally, he said, "True. But we cannot fret about it, can we? We'll make camp and see what happens." He poured me a half cup of water, saying happily, "Since we have made land, we can celebrate." I drank it slowly and thoughtfully.